Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's got to 2-2, and we've still got more than half an hour to go, and here's Ozil. Lacazette.
Yo!
Could've went left, but it went right. Could've went wrong, but it went right. Said it was Ian, but it went right.
Man, we got
bars on bars on sight. MVP in the
night.
Tell a negative to positive.
We're heading for a classic in the paper.
Hello, welcome to another Touchy Gooders podcast. My name is Lewis and I'm joined today by Sean. How you doing, Sean?
Yeah, all right, man. Tired. So tired that I was sending random messages to the group chat at 7 a.m. this morning.
Make sure you wrap up warm, all right? Thanks, Sean. I would never have known this fucking minus two outside. Thanks for the heads up.
Hey, listen.
I was going to go into work with you shorts today.
yeah.
No, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, you're probably getting a lack of sleep. Yeah, I hear it. New job and all of that. Like, it's comes with the territory. You know what I mean? So, you know, I too lost a bit of sleep after Saturday's performance. it was a tough day, but obviously things were made a little bit better on Sunday when, you know, the ups dropped points to the ups, which is always good to see. You know. Bit of a strange scenario supporting Spurs against City, but you know, ultimately, you know, the long-term goal had to prevail, right? Short-term pain for Spurs fans is never, you know, it's never the primary thing. We need to get our, you know, we need to get our, what we needed out of the way. But let's start with Saturday. Tough game, man. Very, very tough game. And I have to admit, I looked at that Everton midfield, you know, as the lineups came out, and I thought, this is going to be a long, long Saturday, you know? When I saw the amount of athleticism in that team, and let's just say it, pure PMP, right? Like, I thought, these boys better be up for it today, because if not, we could, you know, we could get us right seeing two here. And, you know, the game itself really kind of reminded me of the Leeds game a little bit. It's just that, obviously, in the Leeds game, I still don't quite know what happened. I think it was just like a mixture of us not being at the races, an early goal, and then Leeds just being just absolute brutes every single time we got the ball. They were onto us. And I felt very similar to this game, and the only difference was we didn't have the goal to kind of like hang on to, and you know, Everton started very strong, and you know, I think a lot of the discussion this week has been around, is there now a blueprint to beat Arsenal? You've seen Leeds do a similar job. You've seen Everton do what they did on Saturday. Do you think there's a trend developing in terms of like how teams can approach games against us? And obviously Newcastle as well. Sorry, I should have mentioned.
Yeah. I know you're there. I don't think I'm there yet. Just because, like, I feel like we've played a lot of low block teams and we've beaten a lot of low block teams this season. Now, you could argue, you know, some people would use the argument that, you know, Jesus was around at the time. But, you know, I find it hard to be too judgmental at the moment, considering we've played 20 league games. We literally won 16. We've drawn two and we've lost two. You know, it's the best start in the club's history. So, yeah, so maybe I'm not there yet in terms of the trends. Maybe, like I said, but I think I'd need to see it over a bigger sample size to say that this is an issue. Now, there are definitely discussion points we can have. Do you know what I mean? So I think in both games, Newcastle and Everton, there were certain things where I looked at and I think, this is still an upgrade opportunity here, or maybe could Arteta have changed something, you know, slightly here tactically to maybe give us a bit more of an advantage. Now, you know, I don't want to be too harsh, like I said, because I think Arteta's managed superbly this season, but, you know, it's this is like first world problems now, you know, we were really in the trenches before with some of the stuff we used to talk about, but this is more about fine-tuning, finding out about how we can extract that extra 5%, you know. And obviously what we're saying, you know, like the Leeds game, we had a goal to hang on to. Maybe if, you know, the Saka shot that gets cleared off the line, the one that Eddie blazes over, if we get a goal there, maybe it turns into something different and, you know, Everton are forced into a different game. But yeah, no, it was, you were right, it was tough, man. Very, very tough. And I was one of those, I saw it before the game and I was like, you know, when you just look, you're like, this might be bad timing. A Sean Dyche team is hard to play against at the best of times. They're tough, they're compact, they're very narrow. They rarely give anything away in open play. And on top of that, like, you know, his Burnley team were tough, but they didn't have PMP like Everton did, boy. This feels like, it's just like, I feel like watching this, I'm like, bruv. You know, we lost. I think Sean Dyche is going to beat a lot of teams with this Everton team. Do you know what I mean? So going forward. So yeah, so it was a disappointing game. And I think there's stuff we can get into in terms of granular detail about how we can improve. But it's one of those things that happens, man. It's our first loss in September. Can't be too angry at that. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, no.
If you're averaging one defeat every 5 months, I'll take it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Goodison Park has turned into a bit of a bogey ground for us anyway. We lost there last year. We haven't won
them in Southampton.
Yes, they're turning into grounds where we really struggle. And historically, we always did well at those grounds, which is quite interesting, you know. But, you know.
And to be fair, we still do well against them at home, but obviously, like away. But I think, you know, it can be quite cliche, but Everton are not a 19th place team. Let's be honest. Mm. They should be sitting in like mid-table. Do you know what I mean? They've massively underperformed. So yeah, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I think Sean Dyche definitely can bring the best out of Everton, like with the qualities that you mentioned. And, you know, he's got a lot more tools at his disposal than he would have at Burnley. And I think if Sean Dyche had like an ideal team, like, What that team was, that's the Sean Dyche team, right? Like Tarkowski,
really centre back,
Doucouré, Ndidi, Iwobi, you know, like a lot of like hard working players. And you know, I do want to just push back on something that you said about Everton's the way they played. I didn't actually think they played a low block. I thought they played quite high up the pitch and I actually thought they were quite brave against us, and we made quite a few poor decisions on the counter on a few occasions as well. And I don't think it was like something like we couldn't break them down. I just think it was the game was too, it was just too bitty, and there were a lot of fouls, and we couldn't gain a momentum in the game. They didn't allow us to gain a momentum in the game, and they also provided their own threat going forward as well, which you know kept us honest, 100%. And 100%. We never really got a foothold in the game, you know, where you know those moments in games where right Zinchenko completely takes over the game or Ødegaard completely takes over the game. I don't think we had a real moment in that game in this game where, you know, we were allowed to do that. And I've got to give Everton a lot of credit because they suffocated us, really. You know, that's the first game I can I can remember where Zinchenko has not had a playmaking period in the game. He was literally a left back. That was it. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a standard left back. There was no space for him in the middle to pick up. And I just wonder, the reason I think that maybe could this be a trend going forward is if you can negate, you know, the Zinchenko effect and force us to do something else, you can do that by packing out the midfield. And then it's up to us to come up with other solutions. And obviously we still have players like Partey, Ødegaard, who can, you know, pick the lock and find passes. But for some reason that just didn't happen at Everton.
I think it was interesting. I don't know if you saw Saliba's quotes yesterday he gave to French media, and he said, Arteta said they quite simply they just didn't compete as well. You know, which didn't in turn allow us to stand to, you know, to stamp our authority on the game. You know, you spoke about the game being bitty, and Arsenal were normally a team of flow. You know, the game needs to flow for us to get at our best. And, you know, how often have we sat here and talked about in the last year, you know, Xhaka and Partey have completely dominated or blamed any midfield they've come up against. But I think this was one of the first times I could say in like what the last year, 18 months that they got had up, you know, in a midfield. So, and, It's rare it's happened, you know, because how often have we been talking about how much they've physically dominated, won their duels, which has allowed us to sustain pressure and pin teams back, you know, the constant winning of second balls, being first. I think Everton were first to pretty much everything, especially Onana and Doucouré and Gay. They ran all over us. So I just think it was a case of, yeah, and Saliba said we needed to compete better, and we made too many basic errors on a granular level, and it feels like a bit of a shame because we had like an 8-day break from the FA Cup against Man City before that game, so it's not even like you could put it down to like fatigue or
and rotation as well.
Yeah. So like I said, it can happen, innit. So I think if we bounce back and beat Brentford on Saturday, no one's going to care. Like, too tough. It can, like you said, it can happen. That's why I'm not where you are maybe yet to draw too many conclusions from it. Just because, like, how many we've literally played well in, I'd say about 95% of games this season. Do you know what I mean? So if this is one of those 5% games that you have maybe during a season where you're just not at your best for maybe a variety of reasons, so you could maybe put it down to, you know, new manager tax, Goodison Park crowd, Everton a bit of a bogey team, we didn't compete as well, didn't get our game off. So probably all of those five factors are mixed in together, and it just culminated in not being, you know, a performance which has normally been, you know, up to par this season. So that's what I'd write it down to. But, you know, I think if we don't go and beat Brentford on Saturday, and maybe, you know, the manner of the performance is something we've got to pay attention to, then maybe we might start looking, start asking questions, start evaluating. Because if you remember, do you remember this during this period last year, I think from like Jan to March, we were on a really good run in the league, and we were winning games, but we were winning games on very fine margins, and we were talking about how we were winning games, but Lacazette wasn't scoring, like, do you know what I mean, like at all. So maybe it is a case of, you know, from a position of strength, sometimes you maybe look and evaluate where can we get better, where can we improve, you know. So it'd be interesting to see if Arteta chooses to change anything against Brentford on Saturday, because, you know, there were a couple, no one played well on Saturday, do you know what I mean? But maybe there's some areas that we can,
no,
you know,
except maybe the centre-backs.
Yeah, the centre-backs were good, I thought, but yeah, so... Yeah.
What the hell? My internet is going crazy. I don't know what is going on. The last month or so, my internet is just ridiculous. Like, it is ridiculous. I'm gonna have to chop this bit out, and I'm gonna have to do a lot of editing. Just in terms of like individual performances, you mentioned there, obviously, that you mentioned that there were quite a few poor performances. I think there are probably a few notable ones, right? We talk about, you know, the form of Martinelli is a real talking point at the moment, especially with the addition of Trossard. You know, I think people obviously have that, I want to see the new signing play, and And obviously it's coupled that Martinelli has fallen off a little bit in form. I think we can all agree with that. But do you see this as like a falling off in form from Martinelli, or do you think it has a wider implication into the omission of the lack thereof of Gabby Jesus in the team, and you know the connections, because we when those two were playing together, we often spoke about their chemistry, their connections, you know, the combinations they were able to build on a pitch, and we see now that. You know, I heard on, I think it was Ars Vision, they were talking about it, and they were saying that Nketiah and Martinelli have passed to each other like once in the last two games, which is, you know, a stark comparison to obviously Gabby and Martinelli's combinations. So do you think there's something to it that, you know, Martinelli's lack of influence on the game is, you know, has something to do with Gabby, or do you think this is just Martinelli going for a bit of a bad spot?
I think it's probably a range of all of those factors. This is the first period in his career where he's played so consistently. And you know, it's back to this. We do forget, you know, we're sitting top of the table with the youngest squad in the league. Do you know what I mean? And because we've become used to such a consistent level of performance over the course of this season, we forget that young players sometimes blow hot and cold. They can have bouts of inconsistency, so that's perfectly normal. But obviously, the frustration that will come on our part now is because we've become accustomed to a certain level of performance throughout the team and throughout individuals. When we do have a drop off, we do become a bit more critical, and I think that's only natural. I do think the Jesus factor is definitely key. I said in the group chat a couple of days ago as well, is that it's noticeable that. If you remember first half of the season, I think the left-hand side was a lot more prominent than the right-hand side. So Jesus and Martinelli were the ones dovetailing a lot. Xhaka was crashing the box a lot in that early half of the season where he racked up numbers and he hasn't scored or assisted in a while. Actually, no, tell a lie, he assisted against United, but he hasn't scored in a while. Whereas it's noticeable that since Jesus has been out, that Ødegaard Xhaka right-hand side has been very, very dominant. And it might just be a fact that Jesus is so influential in the way we play our game that others defer to him. Whereas, the point you made about Martinelli and Nketiah exchanging one or two passes, you know, Jesus drops in deep into midfield, so he overloads. That might have been something we missed against Everton on Saturday. He drifts to the left. What does that drifting to the left do? It opens up space, and that space is sometimes attacked by Martinelli. Sometimes it's attacked by Xhaka. So, you know, we've lost a bit of fluid rotation because where Eddie has picked up the slack in terms of goals, Eddie's still more of a fixed position. He doesn't rotate as much. Do you know what I mean? So what does that mean? Other individuals probably have to adapt and maybe they're not doing the same things because Eddie is always in the box. Like, he's not given the same space for Martinelli, who had that opportunity to, you know, make that out to in run before that. Like, he was probably doing a lot more in earlier parts of the season. So it's just, you know, adapting. You know, Eddie's been a big beneficiary, but maybe some others have suffered as a result. So maybe that's partly what we have to look at. So for me, he definitely misses Jesus, probably just inconsistent to an extent himself. But and also, I don't think we fed him early enough. You know, we were building up a lot on the right hand side, and that early switch was on to Martinelli every time, but maybe we were a bit too slow to release it to him. But maybe it's also, again, Martinelli's going to have to try and add more strings to his bow. You know, when we spoke about Saka, when we were having, you know, oh, can Saka do this? You know, I'd like Saka to add this. You know, I think we can maybe apply that to Martinelli as well. I think, you know, that 1v1 overall approach play, I still think there can be a bit more added there because, you know, add some more unpredictability to his movements, go inside, out. He just doesn't really have that ISO package that, you know, Saka has as well. So, yeah, I think there's probably about three factors that feed into maybe his form tailing off a bit at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think another player who maybe is coming under but you know, his performances as of late haven't been great. And you mentioned him was Xhaka, and again, that is quite heavily linked to, for me, is quite heavily linked to Jesus as well. You know, we're not seeing the Xhaka of the first half of the season, you know, getting involved in the box, having a lot of touches in the box, a lot of shots. We're not seeing it. And, you know, those third man runs aren't happening as much. And I think I don't think it's just down to he's just stopped doing it, or he's stopped making the decisions, or his decision making is bad. I just think it is to do with, you know,
the Eddie dynamic, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it's to do with the fact that, you know, maybe the situations where he would have done it previously just aren't arriving.
On.
Yeah, they're just not on. So he's not making the decisions. He's not arriving in those situations because it's just not there.
And if you remember first half of the season, it was so noticeable. The amount he was crashing, like you said, the third man run off the box, he was making off consistently. So yeah, maybe it's a case of Eddie being more of a fixed pivot as the striker means maybe, you know, he has to dovetail. Maybe he's not as, you know, he's not crashing the box as much as he did earlier in the season. But that's a bit of a shame as well, because that means it's also not creating more space for Martinelli to move inwards as well. And it's all becoming a bit too clogged, a bit too centralised. There's not enough fluidity or rotations that there were first half of the season. So, yeah, it's probably something to note. And again, you know, as good as Xhaka has been, and he's been fantastic over the last 18 months, 2 years, there are sometimes still hindrances when, you know, he finds himself in zone 14. We either want him to carry or create, and, you know, he doesn't have, you know, enough incisiveness because, you know, the main part of his game is too predictable. And this is, I was saying this the other day, in the fact that, you know, part of the issue in this game, Lewis, was that both our wingers were getting doubled up on. So where was the space? The space was actually inside in the half spaces with Xhaka and Ødegaard. But Ødegaard's a fantastic passer, but he can't carry the ball. Xhaka can't carry the ball. So, you know, it becomes a bit too centralised. Everything's a bit too in front of Everton. And that became too easy because we didn't have any destabilisers. What do we talk about? If you think back to, do you remember the goal we scored against Wolves? The first goal. Earlier in the season, when Jesus was, you know, we're talking about rotations here. Jesus was on the left. He dribbled inwards. Vieira made an off the ball run, third man run off the ball in the final third. You know, that opened up that deep block. Do you know what I mean? So it's those against deep blocks. I always think you need dribblers and destabilize and people who are going to run off the ball. So, and I don't think that was probably something we didn't have enough of at the weekend. So that might be, you know, an area Arteta has to look for going forward. Again, I would understand that he might not have wanted to take Xhaka off because look at what we're up against at Everton midfield. Do you know what I mean? So and I saw people saying, oh, maybe he should have put maybe a Trossard or a Vieira in there, but I could have seen them potentially getting blamed, you know, at Goodison Park. And obviously, I don't want to make excuses. That pitch was horrific as well.
It was a bad pitch.
It didn't help our passing game either. So yeah, I think just a range of different factors, man. But going forward, you know, it is still for me an area of, as well as Xhaka has done, I still think we can do more there, you know, in that half space. I think we need a carrier. I think we need a ball carrier in that phase personally for me. So,
yeah, I mean, after all the transfer speculation, it was probably a game where you would look at the bench and be like, oh, I wish I had a Caicedo to bring on. Instead, we had Jorginho, which, you know, I've said my view on it. I don't mind the signing. But not, it wasn't a game where, you know, I was a bit at the time, I was like, I didn't really understand why Partey came off. But maybe obviously, I mean, I don't think Arteta would have taken him off unless he was 100%, you know, unless he wasn't 100%, you know, I'm sure there must've been something more to it. Or what do you think? Do you think that maybe this is like for like, just, okay, this isn't working, let's get Jorginho on instead of Partey?
It feels a weird like for like sub for me, in my opinion, because cool, Jorginho is a better alternative than the likes of Elneny and Lokonga, but he's not better than Partey. Do you know what I mean? It's not a change I would make. It's not an offensive change for me, like I said. So unless, you know, there might have still been something with Partey's ribs from the week before, where maybe he wasn't fully fit going into the game, we don't know. I've not seen anything subsequently since the game, so I don't know. So that can be the only thing I can think of, because Partey doesn't get subbed unless the game is already won or unless he's injured, essentially. So yeah, so that would be my thinking, would be more to the fact that they're still being a bit cautious with him and they don't want to unnecessarily risk anything. So cool, but yeah, Jorginho wasn't bad, but he didn't have any impact either. So yeah.
Yeah, I think, and obviously we've all seen those stats floating around, and we've been talking about Partey's influence on that on the team for what feels like ages now. Is, you know, it's another defeat. that happens when Partey isn't on the pitch. It happened against City in midweek, last week, sorry. It's happened in the previous defeat in the league against Man United. It's happened against Brighton in the Cup. Partey just not playing. It happened against PSV in the Europa League. You know, yeah, whenever he doesn't in play that 90. Game as well.
Yeah,
whenever he doesn't play 90, we come to a defeat. And also, I think when you look at the goal that we conceded with the corner, I think a lot of I think people underestimate just how important Partey is from set pieces. He's a very key influence in box where he wins a lot of those headers. And it's no surprise. And I know Everton were getting a little bit of joy from set pieces. Like they were really just spamming it in the box and putting us under a lot of pressure. But I think we dealt with it quite well in the most part. They didn't get any clear chances from set pieces. They were just putting it to the back stick kind of thing. But it is kind of telling that literally Partey's gone off for a minute. They get a set piece and there's unorganization for the first time. And we concede from, I mean, how many set pieces have we conceded from this season? It's got to be, you know, we could probably count them on one hand, right? I think we've got the best set piece record in the Premier League. And people were saying, oh, how dumb is it that Ødegaard is marking Tarkowski? That shouldn't be allowed to happen. That's literally how we defend corners. We defend corners like that every week and we don't concede. Yeah. We don't concede. So there is something, there's something working about it, you know? So I think these things only get highlighted when a goal is scored. And it's like, wait, if we replayed the hundreds of corners that we've played, that we faced this season, we set up exactly the same way. It'd be Ødegaard marking Tarkovsky 100 times. And it will happen again as well. The issue comes is that I don't think we, you know, I think Saliba gets blocked off in the middle where he's, you know, he's probably the one that is going to go and win the header. And it's just kind of left Ødegaard against Tarkovsky. And, it happens. And when you don't have a Partey on the pitch, he's so good aerially. It's an area that people do not talk about in his game. Offensively and defensively, Partey is very good in the air, very, very good in the air, and his absence there was telling. I think if he's there, he probably, you know, he either stops Saliba from getting blocked off or he wins the header himself, or Saliba wins the header or whatever. But I just wonder if, you know, I kind of just wanted to make that point really. But what did you think of Jorginho's debut?
I just don't think there's much to be said. It was just a bit of a non-entity. Like, I've seen some people try to discredit him a bit too much, and that's probably laced with a bit of agenda, which I don't agree with. So I just don't think it was anything. There's nothing literally to tell. Like, he wasn't bad, he wasn't good. Like, it was just normal. I can't really make much of an assertion after what, 35 minutes, in my opinion, in which we barely didn't create anything in that second half. We'll wait and see. So, but I mean, I wouldn't start him against Brentford if Partey's fit. So nothing changes for me. For me, this is just an able body that will probably start most of the Europa games, and maybe the odd Prem game. But yeah. I think the key for us, essentially, based on what we've seen, and especially in the games that we've lost, is that we just need to protect Partey where we can and just make sure he's available to play like 90% of the remaining league games, especially. So,
for real. It's if he is carrying an injury, and with obviously looking ahead to Man City game, which is probably going to be the most important game of the season, right? Like, that is, so far, that is going to be our most important game of the season. And it could turn out to be the most important game of the season. Because if we win that, we're streets. If we beat Brentford, we beat Man City, we're fucking streets ahead, right? So with that in mind, do you look at this Brentford game? And if there's just a slight issue with Partey, do you look at resting him? Do you look at just wrapping him in cotton wool for that Man City game?
Well, I mean, it's definitely something I think Arteta's going to have to look to, and not even just for Partey. I'm thinking for the whole team generally, because, you know, most of this season, Arteta's played two different teams. He's had a different team for Prem, a different team for Europa or Cup, whatever it is. But this is now, I think, the first block or first stretch this season where we have 3 games in 7 days. So we have Brentford on Saturday. Then I think we have City on Tuesday or Wednesday. Then we have Villa on Saturday. So you can't now rinse the first team for those 3 games, because there's going to be a, even if you said they could do the first 2 games, by that Villa away game, there's going to be a massive dip. So it's going to be interesting to see how Arteta balances that. And obviously, it's going to be key, because we have what we now perceive as a better bench, right? So these guys are going to need to play more, because if they're going to need to start the odd game, they're going to need to, we don't want them coming in cold, you know what I mean? So I'm going to be very interested to see what Arteta's choices are over the, in fact, the next 6 games, they all come in that, in like a batch. So we have a 3 in 7 days, then another 3 in 7 days. Mm. So I think that will, after this batch of 6, will be, it will tell us a lot. So it's going to require more than just performances. This is where the squad is going to be key, in my opinion anyway. So
yeah,
let's see.
I think a change that, you know, Arteta potentially could have made, and I think would have maybe added a different dynamic, is I think we've been so high on Zinchenko that, mm-hmm. you know, we it's kind of detracted away from what we know Tierney is good at. And I think sometimes we forget that Tierney is still a very, very good left back. And I did feel like we lacked a bit of dynamism down the wide areas. Like, we weren't getting any change out of from Martinelli against Coleman. Trossard came on and did okay. But Trossard obviously likes to operate more inside, whereas Martinelli's more round the outside kind of thing. And I do think that would have complemented Trossard quite well, would have been having Tierney going on the left side. Now, I know you don't really want to take Zinchenko off, because he's such a baller. And, you know, if we are to get control of the game, Zinchenko is probably the second person on the team sheet that you'd want to be playing, right? Is him and Partey in that middle, left middle zone, just dictating the tempo of the play. But that wasn't happening. And it didn't seem like we were going to be able to get to that position to have that control over the game. So I just wonder if, you know, Tierney, those are the kind of games where we can really stretch Everton. You know, if they are flooding the middle, let's give them something to think about, you know, out wide. And that would have been a change I would have been looking to make, really, is get Tierney on the overlap, force them back, let Trossard operate in those central areas, you know, give them something to think about in that respect, get him to link the play with Xhaka if Eddie's not going to do it. This is just one of the first games I thought maybe Mikel hasn't quite judged the game accurately. And I think his game management has come on leaps and bounds this season. So I don't really have any criticisms there. It's just, I didn't feel like he quite grasped the temperature of the game in this game. But it's not a criticism. It's just, you know,
Observation.
Yeah. I've been used to him this season anyway, judging the temperature of games very well, making the right subs at the right times. This was the first game where I'm looking at the Jorginho sub for Partey. If we are just saying it's nothing injury related, I think that's a bad sub. I think obviously Ben White, we'll get onto Ben White as well, actually. I thought Ben White is going through a bit of a rough patch, right? The Man United game, he had to be taken off at halftime. And obviously today against Everton, he was quite poor. And I do wonder if, you know, is it time just to maybe give Tomiyasu the game against Brentford? And if he plays well, he stays against Man City. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I think it's weird because, like, generally he has been so consistent since he joined us from Brighton. Like, you could count the amount of bad games he's had on one hand. So, like, these last 2 games against Everton and United, where he's been uncharacteristically poor, like, I hope he's okay. Like, because that's what him having a bad game is just making me like, is everything okay? Like, generally, like, I don't know. Like, it feels weird to me. Mm. So, and he has been off colour. So maybe it is just a case of, you know, our second choice fullbacks who were first choice fullbacks last season. Maybe we just make that change, and I'd be happy to. I'm comfortable with both of them, yeah. You know, playing if needs be. So maybe that is one of the changes Arteta chooses to go for against Brentford. But it's also one of them. I think I probably would make that change. But then maybe also there's something to be said sometimes. Do you let players play through bad form and play themselves back into form? That's what we did with Saliba, who came back a bit, you know, sloppy, but now he's played himself back into form. So, you know, different ways of judging it. I guess obviously in Saliba's case, the replacement is holding and we're not really trying to see that. So, maybe there'd be no harm in taking Ben White out for a game or two. Tomiyasu's perfectly capable, so...
Yeah. I mean, and I thought he did okay when he came. I thought he did really well against when he came on against Man United. I think he did okay against Everton. Didn't really have much to do, to be honest. But I'd be very confident in him coming in. And yeah, I think you're right. Ben White has been so consistent. So it is a bit concerning. But maybe it's not. I mean, players have bad games, man. Players go through runs of bad form. You know, even the fucking Invincibles. I'm sure there were periods of that season where, you know, players went through bad games. We just didn't highlight it as much. You know, there wasn't the level of scrutiny that there is now. Every game is like, oh, should we take him out of the team? You know, he's had a bad game today. It's like,
there wasn't social media. There wasn't podcasts. Yeah. We weren't analysing to this extent. So that's why I'm a bit wary. Just generally when we're talking now, is what I'm saying. Am I over analysing too much?
Very likely we are.
Like I said, it's first world problems, isn't it? What we're doing right now is nitpicking because, you know, there's not, even despite that, we're still 5 points clear at the top. So what we're complaining about or what we're having issues with, are they really that big of an issue in the grand scheme of things? Yeah. Like you said, it might just be a bad game. That could literally just be it. But again, we don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. We will see. So obviously we've got Brentford on the weekend. It's going to be a tough game. We dunked on them at their gaff earlier in the season. I thought that was a really good performance from us. You know,
that might have still been our best performance of the season, just because I know what happens when teams go to Brentford.
Yeah.
They whacked up United 4-0.
Chelsea.
They slapped Liverpool 3-0. They beat Chelsea. Yeah. They won away at City.
Yeah.
Brentford they're sitting, what, like 6th, 7th? They are a very good team. Yeah. Like a very good team. And, you know, we talk about some of the issues, you know, we spoke about facing about teams who are very compact and narrow. Brentford were. And we still managed to dismantle them, do you know what I mean? So, and they will be tough again. But at home, I feel like we've been very good this season. So, and, you know, the crowd will be behind. I think, you know, sometimes being at home, we're just very comfortable at home at the moment. So I think it's the sort of thing after a defeat, you want to be like, want to play in front of the crowd, spur you on. I'm glad the next two games are at home, just generally. So I think the crowd might have a part to play in both of those games, especially against City anyway. So I think this is an opportunity. I like, you know, coming back to Saliba's quotes, he said, you know, it's an opportunity for us to learn from our mistakes. And I think one thing we have done well this season is whenever we have had a defeat, we bounce back really well.
Yeah. And go on winning runs as well.
So it'd be great if this could be the start of another winning run. So, yeah. And I think it seems to me, even though it's a young group, it's a group that learns very, very quickly. So, you know, we spoke about, remember the first defeat at Old Trafford where we were, you know, very naive and we left too much space in the middle and we haven't really done that again, you know, since. So it's a case of, this game, we're going to need to compete well. Just make sure we're not, you know, we do the basics and the fundamentals well, compete, and hopefully our quality will shine through. And you know, just make sure, like I said, I think from as far back as I can remember, even under Wenger, like Arsenal just need to, when we play well, we more often than not win. Do you know what I mean? So I just want us to focus on doing what we're good at. So yeah. And obviously, it's a lot easier to get the game off at the Emirates, where the pitch is the best pitch in it. So, of course. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I think Brentford will come to play football as well. They're not a rough and tumble side. They're not dirty. I don't think they can play football. They're a bit direct, but I don't think they're a team that's going to come and, you know, try and bully us off the ball per se. I think they might try, but I don't think they have the capabilities of doing that anyway. So,
you've even got to remember with Everton and Newcastle, they are arguably
the most physical teams
in the league you can play in terms of that level of athleticism and PMP. Because you know, people were talking about, oh, do teams use this as a blueprint? Other teams might try. It doesn't mean you have the capability to execute to that level.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like you said, you have to have the personnel. You have to have the, like, we've seen Sean Dyche do this how many times against, you know, whoever. So it was famed that Burnley were not a good team, but nobody really wanted to go and play at Turf Moor. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you knew what you were going to be up against. So hopefully we can respond well against Brentford. And yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what changes, if any, Arteta goes for, because it's a big 7 days coming up, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, potentially if the results are favourable for us over the next 7 days, we could be in a very, very promising position.
100%.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's get through some listeners' questions then before we wrap things up. So Yonko Absi says, do you think J2O will be here next season? I love that nickname, J2O. Do you think he will be here next season? I mean, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. He signed an 18-month deal with an option for another. So I don't think it's like a... we're not going to sell him in the summer. And Arteta likes this player. This is not a player that Arteta is... being begrudgingly signing. He's wanted Jorginho since he's got here. Literally since he's got here. So he's now got that player. I don't see, you know, I think it could even be a thing, whereas as long as he does well and Arteta is getting what he wants out of him, Arteta will trigger that option. And Jorginho will be here for, you know, until he doesn't sign a contract, really, until his contract ends. So, yeah, I don't know how you... Do you see it similar?
Yeah. I expect him to be here next season. And then, obviously, it depends on where he lands after that, because, essentially, he's now 31. He's moving into a mode in his career where he's not first choice. Mm. So, will he want to continue with that backup to party option? Or, you know, if the rumours are... Say, for example, we go and get Declan Rice. Like, Declan Rice is going to end up being a starter. Do you know what I mean? So... he's going to reach a point eventually where, and he might be happy at this stage of his career where, you know, but I remember I saw the reports before we signed him was that he wanted to go back to Italy. So, you know, and he's the sort of player in Italy, he could probably play another 5 years. Do you know what I mean? So
easy. He's only 29. Yeah, he'll be there playing until he's 45, mate.
He's 31.
Is he 31? Oh, I thought he was 29. Yeah, okay, yeah. 31, yeah.
Yeah, he's 31. So, but still, yeah, he could play till he's like 36. So, yeah, so his game would last. So a lot depends on him and how he feels, I guess, as well. And if he's happy with the status, you know. So but we'll see. Yeah, but yeah, definitely here next season.
Yeah. That guy, Daryl, he asks, how big of an impact will Jesus have on his return? I think, you know, so far we haven't missed him in a game yet. Obviously, I want him to be available for every game. I guess you could say Newcastle, right? I think maybe Newcastle, we probably did miss him.
No, the thing is, I think even though we've won, you could still say we've missed him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
it just hasn't been. Player. It hasn't been as like, noticeable.
We haven't felt. Yeah.
Everton was the game where I thought, fucking hell, we could do with Gabby in this game, you know. Even in terms of like the things that he's so good at, just like holding up the ball, bringing others in play, winning a foul like that he has no right to win, you know.
He would have been in that zone where that Everton midfield was, like, he would not have been shook to go into that zone and be like, I'm either fighting you, man, I'm either going to try and take on you, man. And what does that do? That will then create... That's why, like, you know, obviously his goal record hasn't been great, but he does so much for us in terms of what he does, facilitates elsewhere. He takes hella kicks, but he's creating space for other men. So I could never, ever be mad at him. And yeah, there's just a level of quality, like, even though Eddie's been a great goal scorer, his ability to carry, that ability to press and be aggressive from the front, like, you know, I thought Everton were very good at doing that to us, but when Jesus is there, teams are proper shook of Arsenal. Do you know what I mean? When we're so aggressive from the front. So, and like you said, other people miss him. Martinelli especially misses him. So yeah, I think it will be if as long as he comes back in good nick, it will be a massive, massive thing, man. If you can have him for the final 3 months of the season.
Like a new signing.
It is essentially, man. So,
and it would be a big boost as well, especially if we're going through a tough time. Having Jesus back will be a massive lift, because he was the person who really, when you think about it,
he kickstarted it all.
We ended last season on such a bad note, man. Such a bad note. It was horrible. You know, people were saying, they're really worried about Arsenal, you know, they might not even make top six this year, la-di-da-di-da, all that stuff, right? And we were a bit concerned as well. And, you know, he's just come in. And I think for me, he's been the biggest catalyst for change this season. You know, when we talk about who's the most influential out of the guys that have come in this season, Saliba included, I think they've all done their part. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take away from any. I just think Gabby Jesus, he spearheaded everything. And he's just given us the energy. And is there any like word? I know he's back in training, but is there like any like timeline? When he's going to be back? Is it like March or?
The timeline was always March. So
where in March? Mid March, beginning of March, late.
Well, we know 8th of Feb. If he can come back beginning of March, you know.
Yeah, we need him. We need him.
We do need him, and also obviously that March then ties in with where Europa comes back, because I just saw Europa's back now for certain. So obviously us finishing top of the group was nice for us. It means that we still had that extended period, and you know, at the moment it's okay because we've only got league to focus on. But obviously I think the way Arteta's done it, he wants to focus on both competitions, and obviously you need two strikers if you want to go, you know, heavy on both. So
yeah, for real. So just speaking about that City game, SOSHGN, he says, would you take a draw at the Emirates? City need to win. We don't. If I offered you it now, would you take it?
I want to win, man. Do you know what it is? Away, I would bite your hand off. I'm not even debating that. But at home, I just always think we can beat anyone.
Yeah.
Like, and I just think this season, just with how the crowd have been, like, I just feel like we've got something for them. City have not been good away from home. They've not been good away from home. And I just feel like we could do it. So whilst I wouldn't be upset if it ended up a draw, I just feel we could put a real hammer, like, in the coffin for them if we could beat them at the Emirates, man. I mean, I say that, you know, there's still like another 15, 16
games. There is.
Brother, the thing is, there's so long to go.
There is. It's painful, man. It's painful. We've just got past halfway mark, man. It's giving me a headache already. Jeez.
This running is going to be peak. So yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult because we do have such a nice gap that the pressure really is on Man City to win the games, right? In terms of like to catch us, like the onus is on them. I shouldn't say the pressure, we're both under pressure to win games, but the onus is on them to win their games, right? They have like a draw for them does nothing, really and truly.
Yeah.
It does nothing for them. It's only a positive for Arsenal because it's another game chalked off the box, it's another game chalked off basically that they haven't closed the gap on us on. So that's the only reason I would take a draw. If you could offer it to me before the game and said, look, you don't have to sit through that rubbish. Here's a draw. I'd be like, all right, cool. Shake hands. That's it. I would take it, you know? I would take it. Because I don't want to watch that game. I really don't want to watch that game. It's going to give me a heart attack.
I can already feel it.
It's going to be horrible. But, you know, I also think it all depends on, you know, if we don't beat Brentford, we have to beat Man City, you know?
We have to get
that game out of the way first in order to even make that decision, really. You know, because if we drop points against Brentford, I can't take the draw against City. We have to go for the win.
What would you, out of this next block of three that we have, so two home games, so Brentford at home, City at home, and then Villa away, what would you take? Because I think... I think Villa away will be very tough, partly because of the Emery tax, and also that I just checked Villa's fixtures. Villa don't have a midweek game, right. So they will be watching that City game, and they'll be so fresh waiting for us at the weekend. I feel like if I could get 7 from this potential night,
7 would be excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, 7 would just be 8 out of 10 for me. Yeah. 10 out of 10 obviously would be the 9.
The 9, yeah.
When you're looking at now like 6 points or 5, because all of a sudden the gap could be 4 points.
The gap could close, and then you're even giving, the way United have been, you're even giving them potential to close the gap further as well. So you have to be wary about that. So I just, we can't allow too much. So
yeah, we have to
give ourselves a buffer.
Yeah,
we have to. I need 7 from 9, bro. Yeah. I know that's hard, but I need that, bro.
7
I
from need, 9.
Yeah. So, like, whichever one you draw, like I need Brentford has to be a W, and then you're allowed to draw one of City or Villa if the other one's won.
Yeah.
So
if that's
how I see it.
If we were to get 7,
yeah,
I'd be very confident we win the title. Very confident because I just
bro, even after this block of 3 there's still another 15 games to go, bro. There is a long way to go, bro. And
now that you say that
I was just checking the fixtures and I was like, fucking hell, bro. Yeah. Do you know what it is? Because the World Cup was in the middle, I feel like we played bare games, but there's still so long.
There's so much time to go, isn't there? So, all right, okay, I'll take it back before someone chops
maybe you should ask that one on the account tomorrow. How many points do you take from the next block of 3 games?
Yeah. What would you be happy with? Like, what's a... Yeah. Okay, just leading on from that. Nabil Wanada. Big up you, Nabil Wanada. He says, is everyone on the pod truly in belief we win the title from here? Or does anyone still think the City 15-game run is coming? See, I don't think the City 15-game run is coming per se. I don't think this is that City. And I've been saying that all season. Oh, the run is coming. The run is coming. I'm actually at a point of belief where I don't think that run is coming. I think I'm probably a little bit more concerned that we tail off. That's where my main concern is. Not that City are going to go on a fucking crazy run. I don't think they're capable of doing it. I'm looking at that Man City team. The hunger's not there. The drive is not there. The quality is not there for me. They've taken a right step up. I'm looking at that Man City defense and I'm like, you could be got at. You know, teams can beat you. You can drop points. So I'm not that concerned about... Of course, I expect Man City to... I expect them to touch 87 points, I think. So, you know, an incredible amount of points.
What is making you think that there could be a potential to tail off? Is that just based on the fact that we haven't been in this position in a long time? Or is the squad still too young? Or you just don't trust us to get over the line?
I just don't think... The level of results that we've achieved so far, I don't think it's sustainable.
Yeah, that's what I said in the group chat the other day. I said, because if you look at it, over the first 19 games, right, we took 50 points.
Yeah.
If you replicate that over the next 19 games, you hit 100 points. Yeah, that's the record. That's 100 points.
I said,
plainly and simply, we're not hitting 100 points. Yeah. I said, I would even be happy. I said, 90 points is what we can try and aim for, in my opinion. Like, if you took 40, you know, from the next 19...
That's doable, though. 19. That's doable. That's doable. 90 is going to be touch and go, though, I think. I think 90 is going to be touch and go. It's going to be tight. It's going to be down to, like, the last couple games, I think. And that's I don't want to be in that position, if I'm being honest.
I don't want to be, but that's what I said. I think it's going there. Like, we in an ideal world, we want it done, but... And the thing is, I don't even want to make you shook here. But if you look at April's fixtures, bro, you're going to
looking peak,
bro.
Yeah, looking peak. At least the two fixtures I hate the most, right? It's not even Man City. Yeah. I don't even really hate the Man City fixture as much. I will hate it this season because we're in direct competition with them. But it's the Man United and the Spurs game. I fucking hate it because I know it's guaranteed L's. I know it's guaranteed L's, and I know Man City has been guaranteed L's as well. But I do think we can do something against City. I've taken enough from our performance at the Emirates last season and what I've seen from Man City this season. I can see us doing something. But those two games, they're we've beaten Liverpool already this season. They're not a force at Anfield so far this season. That could change. But those are the games that I'm glad that we've just got them out of the way. We've not got to play Man United again and we've not got to play Spurs again. So for me, that's a big relief, you know? And then I look at the, you know, who else have we got to play? Chelsea at home. I mean, I fancy us to beat them. What are the tough away games left? Man City.
St James's Park.
That's going to be a toughie. But that's the sort of game I'll fucking happily take a point in that game. What else is a tough away game? You know, Villa away, I guess, is a tough one.
That's a banana skin because of Emery factor and the fact that they'll be fresh that week.
Yeah, Sean, you look at the top 10, right? Look at the top 10, right? Man City, we haven't played yet. Man United played twice. Newcastle, we played. Tottenham twice. Brighton twice. Brentford will be twice. Yeah. We've played a lot of the top 10. We've played twice already.
Yeah. What I will say is if you look at our remaining 18 fixtures, 10 are at home, 8 are away. Yes. So we played more away from home than we did in the first
half. Which is a big advantage
for us. So we need to make sure. And that's partly why I didn't want to take the point against City. Yeah. I feel like we need to make our home form count.
Yeah.
You know, because just say, for example, you took all 30 points from your 10 home games. Yeah. That's, you want 80 points already, bro.
Yeah.
80.
Yeah.
Which means you could say you could win half of those games away and might still have a chance of winning the title.
Easy.
Well, you would. 92 points, sorry. So 4 from 8. So if you won 4 from... So you could potentially afford to lose 4 games, another 4.
Yeah.
If you follow my model of winning all the home games.
And even if you don't win one of them, it's still... Yeah. It's still enough, you know, really and truly.
Yeah.
And Man City have got, like, I think they've got 9 away games left, and they haven't been particularly strong away from home, which you mentioned.
They lost at home to Brentford.
They drew at home to Everton. Yeah.
They drew at home with Everton. Yeah. So I don't know, man. Let's see, bro.
I've got 2 more questions left. I'll just quickly run through these. So just sticking on City, VJG11 _ he says, if City got a points deduction, would you prefer it to be this season or next?
This season.
I mean, this season, right? Like, why would I want it next season? I don't care about asterisk trophies, man.
I don't give a heck, bro. I need the title now, bro. Yeah. If you deduct them from now, they'll be on 35 points.
Yeah,
yeah, I need that, bro.
And in fairness, I don't need just a points deduction. Obviously. I need total relegation, bro. That's what I need. Not just from this league. I need you right down in the Ryman. I need you playing against TLF on Saturday. That's what I need.
You're saying, I need you playing against SC Dons and Vates on a weekly basis.
I need you against SC Dons on Saturday, mate. Like, that's where I need Man City. That's where I need you. Yeah. but it's not going to happen, right? I think the realism is that this is going to be long played out. Probably going to take, could be years, really, to come to a conclusion. You know, I'm sure Man City will fight every single legal battle, every single legal point. So anyone who's hoping for a conclusion to this year is, you're not going to get it. So let that one go, I would say. The last question is from M4F79. He asks, what do you think Trossard's future role in the squad will be? I see him as a Milner type player for us. Okay. In terms of versatility, I can see him by next season deployed left back in the inverted Zinchenko role. Fucking hell, I don't know about that.
I think that's a bit extreme.
That's some FM shit. He's on FM training Trossard as left back. He's unhappy, by the way. He's unhappy. He's very, very unhappy.
Very unhappy with his role. Now, I see if he's going to be recruited, I could see him left centre mid potentially. Mm. I said, because he has very good feet, paws. He could be like how Cazorla was. You know, how Cazorla started on the wing and Cazorla moved inwards. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I could potentially see. So.
Yeah, he's definitely versatile in the fact that he can play in a multitude of positions, right? He can play right, left, up front, he can play 10. He could probably play centre mid in terms of like that left 8 role or the right 8 role, can do that. So he is very versatile, and I'm sure that's going to make him a very useful player to Arteta. But for now, I think he is being brought in as a wide man.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
And that's where we're going to see him primarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's call it an evening there. Sean, thanks for joining me. Thank you for everyone tuning in. If you do want more exclusive Tochi Gunners content, you can sign up to our Patreon, where we, you know, we do all sorts of like post match straight after the game. We do scouting pieces, you name it. It's on the Patreon. The link is in the bio. But yeah, we'll speak to you after 3 points at Brentford. Hopefully, please don't let me down, Arsenal. Please, and maybe some 3 points for SC Dons against Man City as well. But yeah,
I need.
But yeah, Sean, take it easy, man, and we'll speak soon.
Peace.
It's got to 2-2, and we've still got more than half an hour to go. And here's Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil.
Sports Social Podcast Network.